accession number 18260, Real 2.
Vergiliat Real 2. Had you killed pigs before in England?
Only at just before I left to go into the army. A little bit, but not very much.
I thought pigs were killed by stunning them and then cutting their throats.
Well, that is the method, but the method was there, you see, to either... What happened was the officers shot them through the head and then that was stunning them more or less, and then I would cut the throat. But we had done it with the drill sergeant took a felling axe down and he walloped the pig on the head and knocked it down and I cut its throat. But it was done as humane as possible, you know what I mean? We weren't butcher, you know, we weren't sort of cruel or anything. We did it as neatly as possible. Also, they went out shooting wild pigs, sometimes the sergeant's mess, or the sergeant's anyway, and some of the guardsmen went out into the rubber plantations hunting wild boar with dogs, and they did find one or two, and they used to bring them back, and I used to deal with them, but they weren't like normal pigs. They've got hair on them like hedgehogs. They're really, and I used to skin them. I didn't try to get the hair off them. I just took the old skin off them and cut them up, and they used them for the sergeant's mess as well. But because I know that they sort of bled them straight away by taking, you know, carving them up and taking the insides out. They weren't hung properly because wild pigs are like game. They want hanging, and they're muscular, and I think they will be a bit tough. But anyway, they had them in the sergeant's mess. I used to prepare them, and they did eat them. And but I didn't fancy it myself.
Did it not taste as good?
I never tasted it, actually. I didn't see anything wrong with it, but to me, it was like eating a fox or a rat. You know what I mean? They're wild sort of things, and the meat was a bit... what do you call it? Red, dark, you know what I mean? With it not being bled properly and not being hung, it was game, sort of gamey. So I didn't bother. But although I prepared it for them, I used to do it for them and that. But, and then once or twice they up in the Cayman Islands, they sent a lot of these Chinese back home and they confiscated their pigs and chickens. And once or twice they sent pigs back to me that they'd killed up in the Cayman Islands and for me to use. But by the time I got them, I wasn't happy with them, and I used to get the medical officer to come and see them, and I used to condemn them because it's such a humid atmosphere there that once you've killed anything and it's lain around very long, it's gone off in no time at all. And if there was any doubt about anything, I just wouldn't pass it for food. And the medical officers would say, just bury it. And we did. But they did try to kill these pigs and send them back to me. But you see, they'd killed them the day before. And they'd been overnight in these trailers and coming down to me. And they weren't fit to eat. So I just got rid of them.
How did you tell that they weren't fit?
There was flies on them, and the smell, you could tell straight away that they was not fit. So we didn't use them. But, the pigs that we did kill in the camp, we did eat. And they was quite all right. The Chinese would always use them. As soon as you put the insides or any part of a pig in a bin, you turned your back and 5 minutes later the Chinese had got it and it's gone. they could utilise everything out of a pig, every single piece of it. And because I never bothered with any of the insides of the pig, I just used to dump them all, sort of thing. But they would take it all away and eat it. Because we had a lot of Chinese in the camp, you see, doing the laundry, barbers, and what else did they do? General cleaning duties, cooks and assistant cooks and that sort of thing. So there was quite a few Chinese working in the camp.
Were they trustworthy?
Yes, yeah, there was good workers, yes. Of course, they were very keen and very careful because they would like the job, you know, it was a good job for them.
Do you think they might have been giving information to the enemy?
Oh, no, I don't think. They would be vetted, the word. Yeah, they'll be vetted before anything like that, before they came in the camp.
Well, the soldiers presumably didn't just get meat. What other foods would they get?
We had a lot of fish. Because it is one of their basic diets, I think, after Himalaya. They do eat a lot of fish, and we got some really monstrous fish that I prepared them, but it didn't come in. It wasn't mixed with the meat, it was away from the meat. But we did have fish two or three times a week. Of course, corned beef and. And everything else is whatever we needed. There was no shortage of anything. We was well fed. Mm. I looked after the bread, the vegetables, and the meat. In my three stores, like.
Were they local vegetables?
Yes, yes. It was all local. It was all brought in by Chinese contractors, like, who was contracted to suppliers. Yeah.
Were they vegetables of the type that we know?
Potatoes, yes, mainly, and fruit as well. We used to get a lot of fruit, local fruit, pineapples, bananas and apples, which was all local, yeah.
Was the food and cooking appreciated by the troops?
Oh, yes, yeah. But, of course, when they went out on patrols into the jungle, there was on hard rations, you know what I mean? There was on dry rations and what do they call them? I forget now what they call them. It was a type of ration that you got when you was on active service away, you see, in the jungle. All things that they could utilise easy. And they used to get airdrops as well. If they was out for more than two or three days, they would get airdrops from Dakotas, which was all organised, you know, from the battalion headquarters.
Did you have to prepare the food for the jungle?
No, because I say all the food that they took out with them, apart from a bit of haversack ration when they first went, it was all. Dried ration, dry stuff, you see. Boxed.
Could the troops complain to you if they didn't like the food?
There was always a picket officer which went round every day, especially in the battalion, when they're in the battalion headquarters, to Tapper, and he asked for any complaints. Every dinner time there was always a picket obviously going round to, and breakfast, to make sure that everybody was happy with what they got.
What were the main problems as far as you were concerned in being a cook and butcher?
The primitive part was that you had the cookers that was wood-fired cookers, ovens and boilers, but You adapt. You adapt to whatever you're doing. I know we had six or seven of these small boilers, and you had to go along in the morning and light them all with paraffin and some wood. And but once they got going, you adapted to it. It was quite straightforward.
Did the enemy ever attack the camp?
No. No, we had patrolling guards on every night, but no, we had no trouble at all at the actual camp.
Can you tell me more details about when you went out for these to these villages where you had to try to catch any sympathisers?
Yes, we went out at, as I say, dawn, and because these houses are Chinese and Malay and whatever, you knocked on the door or whatever the was there, and you had to tear everybody out, and as you tear them out, so out came the chickens and the pigs and everything. It seemed to be all in the same house. I don't know whether it was in the same rooms, but everything came out at the same time, which was rather amusing. And you had to escort them down to a central part, which was sort of like the village square, I suppose, and then go for some more. And you had to sort of go through the jungle quite a bit to find, because there was all scattered about. It wasn't like a street or a road or anything. It was, there was all scattered about in the trees. And I can remember one I brought out, and he offered me money, but I just ignored him at the time. I didn't think anything of it. I just pushed him on. I said, "Go, you know." And I don't know whether he had any reason. I didn't thought afterwards. I didn't know whether he had any reason he didn't want to be screened. I don't know, but I just ignored him and pushed him into this village square. And in the square was would be a bus with all dark curtains, and obviously there was an hole in this curtain, and these people, these Chinese who knew who these sympathisers were, could tell, but the people couldn't see them, if you know what I mean. It was sort of a secret way of finding out who was, because these villagers were sympathising with the communists, and someone was feeding them, you know, or giving them food or money. And the other people knew, and they were sort of, we was trying to find who they were who was sympathising with these communists. And when they found somebody, they just used to take them, the police used to take them away. They would just put handcuffs on them and take them away to the local police station. And then as soon as they'd all been checked, all our identification had been checked, and they'd all been, there was a check-in section, they would be released, and they could all go back to their homes, like. But it was just a matter of finding who the sympathisers were, because that's what the communists was doing. You see, they was either threatening them with shoot if they didn't supply them, or they would get them to give them things without, or, and for information, I suppose, more than anything as well. But it was all local villages round about within the about 10 or 15 miles sort of thing of where we were.
Do you think you took them by surprise, or do you think they really knew you were coming?
Oh, we took them by surprise, because it was I don't think we nobody knew where we was going until the last minute. It was all organised by the local police and Malaya, the Malay regiment, I think. You know, they decided where we was going to go, like.
How were the villagers treated by the troops?
Oh, very well. We got on very well with the local residents, and that everything was very friendly.
Were you warned not to take money from them?
No, nothing whatever. There was never any mention of it, no.
And was any damage done to their property?
Only the ones that were found to be sympathisers, and known sympathisers, they were sent back to China. If they were Chinese, naturally. They were Chinese. And their villages was destroyed, yes. And the people that were friendly with us, they made a compound. They made a compound like a new village, which was surrounded by barbed wire with guards as a protected area, so that they couldn't be intimidated by these communists.
Did you see the destruction of any villages?
No, I didn't, but I knew it had been done. There was some in the book there that they did up in the Cayman Islands. They found some sympathisers there and they confiscated their property and paid them compensation and sent them back to China.
How did you like doing these dawn swoops?
I didn't mind at all. I enjoyed doing something different. It was different to what I was usually doing, and I took it in my stride. It was just one of the jobs we had to do, yes.
Did you ever go on any jungle patrols?
No, not as such, because I was at headquarters all the time in the at Timo Hill, but just going on these local screening operations, which was round about the camp, around about the area.
Did you ever feel yourself in danger in Malaya?
You were in danger all the time, even when they're going for meat, because it was an ambush country. Because you was travelling on roads and rail, where on either side is the jungle all the time, it was an ideal. It's always ideal for the ambushers, if you know what I mean, because they can see you and you can't see them. So you was always under threat, but you seemed to go get used to it, and you was always aware of it, but you got used to it.
Did you feel that you were getting on top of the guerrillas?
Oh, I always thought we would be on top of them, yes. They was always on the run. Apart from ambushes, they were never seen to attack you, if you know what I mean. It was always an ambush, roadblocks and that sort of thing, where they could sort of come and then disappear. They never stopped to put up a fight. Whenever there was approach, they disappeared, if you know what I mean. They ran, they went.
Did you ever come across any hostility from any of the inhabitants?
No, not at all, no.
Did you have anything to do with the white civilian population?
Not as such, because there was only rubber planters and tea plantation owners, and they seemed as if there was always associated more with the officers. They didn't have a lot to do with the soldiers, apart from the fact that they met them like in their duties. But no, we didn't see many white people at all.
What did you do in your spare time?
Well, we had a good naffy. We used to run bingo and tombola, whatever it was called, and we used to get invited to the Sergeant's Mess for a sports evening when we had darts and dominoes. And that was about it, I think. But there was always a bit of music going in the naffy, if you wanted to go in the naffy for a bit of a sing-song or a bit of music.
How did you like life in Malaya?
Not all that excited about it. It was too hot and humid. You just took it in your stride. It was your duty. You had to be there and made the best of it. I was always looking forward to coming home. I know that. I was always looking forward to getting home. But now we settled down and did our job.
Did you ever fall sick in Malaya?
Not sick, no. We had to take a tablet every day, Paladin tablet, for against malaria, which I took religiously. I never had any trouble that way. I had some skin infection, which was through sweating a lot. Tinea, ringworm, I think I had once on my face. It's all part of of sweating, and And prickly heat, that was another thing you suffer with, yes. And but you get treatment for them, and whatever they give you seems to clear it up, no problem. I did go into hospital once. I dropped a block of ice on my big toe, and I had to go to hospital in Tampin, I think it was called, and have a minor operation to remove the nail, and that sort of fractured it slightly. And I was in there about a week or 10 days, but apart from that, I had no problem.
Did the battalion seem to be being successful in Malaya?
Oh yes, I think they was very successful. Yes, they we still go back. The association have been back. Malaya veterans have been back to Malaya, and they're always received with great, affection. You know, the people who knew us out there, like. Mm.
And what did you do after Malaya?
I was out there for 2 years, and then we came back to Singapore, and we was in Selarang Barracks in Singapore for 2 or 3 months, or probably a week or two, I can't remember now. And then we got the troop ship back to England, and landed at Liverpool, coming back.
How long had you signed on for in 1945?
For 7 years, but in actual fact I did 7.5 years because of the emergency in Korea. It sort of delayed everybody going out of the army. But it was 7 years with the colours and 5 years on the reserve.
Was there ever any question of your going to Korea?
Now let me think. I don't think so, no. But I'm trying to think. I was on the reserve, and I can remember I thought I might get pulled back for something after the war. I think it was another, would it be? There was some reason anyway that I was delayed, but I was on the reserve for 5 years anyway after I came out in 1953. But I should have come out in 1952, but it was March 1953. I can't really remember now.
What do you feel now about having served in the Coldstream Guards?
Oh, I'm proud to have been in the Guards, yes. And I've been a member of the association ever since I've come out.